Fox News confirming at least one aircraft carrier is en route to the Middle East with other military assets from air, land, and sea expected to begin flowing into the region.
Donald Trump has said that a big force, that is a big naval force, is now moving towards Iran.
This at the same time that the United States has begun repositioning a carrier strike group from the South China Sea to the Middle East.
You and I have watched this movie before. Washington moves a carrier, headlines start screaming, and the Gulf suddenly feels like a matchbox with too many hands hovering over the striker. But the reason it keeps happening is deeper than any single crisis. Since the 1979 Iranian Revolution and the break in US, Iranian relations, the relationship has been defined by two competing stories that refuse to reconcile: America's belief that it must police the region's order, and Iran's belief that it must guarantee its sovereignty against a superpower that has repeatedly tried to pressure, isolate, or reshape it. Layer in the long shadow of sanctions, the tug of war over Iran's nuclear file, the tanker wars of the 1980s, and the post-2003 security chaos in Iraq, and you get a pattern where military posture becomes a language in itself, especially when diplomacy is frozen or politicized. That is why a carrier near Iran is never just a ship. It is a floating sentence written in steel, and it is meant to be read by Tehran, by US allies, by global markets, and by every commander on both sides who understands how quickly miscalculation can escalate. Now, here is the part most people miss when they stare at the flight deck photos. Carriers do not just show up, they move through geography like a storyline, and every choke point, every port call, every day of transit quietly signals intent. Based on the most current reporting and corroborated open source tracking, the carrier being redirected toward the Middle East as tensions spike is the nuclear-powered aircraft carrier USS Abraham Lincoln, operating with its strike group and carrier Air Wing 9 while on its part. Tehran released a shocking video demonstration of obliterations of US bases and aircraft carriers in the Middle East. I will speak a little more on that as we progress in the video. For now, kindly take a moment to like this video, subscribe if you haven't already. They are all free. Do you think the arrival of the carrier marked the beginning of the war? Let me know what you think in the comments. If we trace the Lincoln's recent path, it reads like a deliberate pivot, not a casual patrol. In mid-November 2025, the Abraham Lincoln Carrier Strike Group conducted a high-profile visit to Guam, a strategic logistics and command hub for US power projection in the Indo-Pacific, and then continued operations across the Western Pacific. By early this month, multiple reports indicated the carrier group was operating in the South China Sea when new tasking pushed it westward toward the Indian Ocean and onward to the US. Central Command Theater, with ship tracking placing the carrier transiting key sea lanes, including movement through the Strait of Malacca area after a regional port visit. This is why the phrase strike position near Iran matters. It implies not just presence but geometry. The carrier's air wing becomes relevant when it can generate sorties quickly enough with refueling and electronic warfare support to sustain pressure across multiple axes without giving the defender time to reset. That is the American theory of the case. But here is where my view, and frankly Tehran's view, is far more grounded than the hype. A carrier is also a giant high-value target that cannot hide its physics. It must operate within certain ranges to generate meaningful strike tempo. It needs predictable patterns for flight operations, and it depends on a web of logistics that stretches back to friendly ports, oilers, and regional bases. Against a peer navy, that is dangerous. Against Iran's style of warfare, it becomes something else. It becomes a magnet in a battle space Iran has shaped for decades, a battle space built around saturation, ambiguity, and layered coastal denial. A carrier is enormous, and its escort formation is not invisible. Even if transponders go dark, the ocean is not empty. Satellites, maritime patrol aircraft, commercial imagery, and regional surveillance all exist. Iran does not need to win by sinking a carrier to impose strategic pain. It only needs to convince US planners that the probability of a mission kill, severe damage, or politically intolerable losses is non-trivial. That is how deterrence works in the real world, not by Hollywood certainty, but by credible risk. Now look at what Iran brings to that risk equation. Iran has long invested in anti-ship cruise missiles and anti-ship ballistic missiles designed for coastal defense, often emphasizing mobility, dispersal, and the ability to fire from multiple points along the coastline and from islands. Systems frequently discussed in open reporting include missiles like Khalij Fars, an anti-ship ballistic missile concept associated with a maneuvering re-entry vehicle approach, and cruise missile families often linked to coastal strike roles. The key is not one named missile, it is the concept of layered salvos, a mix of trajectories and seeker types designed to overwhelm defenses that must make split-second decisions under electronic attack. Then add Iran's drone warfare, which is not about one drone flying heroically at a ship. It is about volume, persistence, and forcing the defender to spend expensive interceptors on cheap expendable targets. Drones can be used for reconnaissance, decoys, and strike roles, and in a maritime environment, they can complicate radar pictures and consume attention. Iran's doctrine has consistently signaled that it sees asymmetric tools as equalizers, and it has repeatedly showcased that logic in exercises and media releases tied to deterrence messaging. Ballistic missiles add another layer, not because a carrier is easy to hit, but because the defender must assume that some number of weapons in a large salvo might leak through, especially under jamming, deception, and saturation. Iran's medium-range ballistic missile inventory, including solid fuel systems like Sejul that are often cited as part of its longer-range deterrent, matters here because it expands the set of regional launch options and complicates preemption. And when Iran speaks about newer missile developments, including claims of hypersonic capabilities such as the Fatah announcement, the strategic purpose is clear. It is trying to convince opponents that interception is becoming harder, not easier. Under the water, Iran's naval approach is not built around matching US carrier submarines in a symmetric duel. It is built around coastal submarines, small craft, and above all, the threat of sea mines and choke point disruption. The Strait of Hormuz, the Gulf's geography, and the narrowness of key approaches create an environment where even the fear of mines can slow operations, force rerouting, and consume scarce mine countermeasure resources. That alone affects carrier effectiveness because carrier operations depend on predictable sea room and secure logistics lanes. This is why the carrier, despite its awe, is not a cheat code against Iran. In fact, it can become a test of American political stamina. Carriers are designed for power projection, but they are also political objects, a symbol that can backfire if it is damaged or if its presence triggers the very escalation it was meant to prevent. Iran understands this psychology extremely well, and it has spent decades shaping a deterrent that targets decision-making, not just ships. Air defense is another piece Western commentary often underestimates. Iran's layered air defense includes domestically developed systems frequently discussed in connection with Bavar 373, paired with other systems and radars intended to create overlapping engagement zones and deny easy penetration. Iran has also shown a pattern of studying adversary tactics, adapting quickly and filling gaps, sometimes through indigenous engineering, sometimes through incremental improvements and integration rather than a single miraculous system. Even critics acknowledge that Iran's defense industry has become adept at rapid prototyping and at extracting lessons from conflicts where drones and precision strike weapons are dominant. Of course, Iran has had vulnerabilities. No serious analyst denies that. Economic pressure through sanctions has been relentless, and air defense networks, like any network, can have seams, especially under surprise and saturation. But what is striking is how consistently Iran has responded by building redundancy, decentralizing command structures, and emphasizing asymmetric counters that do not require perfect air supremacy to be effective. The story here is not Iran is invincible. The story is Iran is costly, and cost is what reshapes American options. Russia and China are not Iran's saviors. Iran does not behave like a client state, and Tehran's strategic culture is too proud for that. What Moscow and Beijing do provide, at minimum, is diplomatic space, economic pathways, and military-to-military signaling through exercises and coordination that remind Washington the world is not unipolar. Joint naval drills involving Iran, Russia, and China have been repeatedly documented in recent years, including exercises in and around the Gulf of Oman area and even broader multinational drills under BRICS-related frameworks that place Iran in wider coalitions of cooperation. But the center of gravity remains Iranian domestic capability, missiles, drones, coastal defenses, and the willingness to absorb pain without surrendering sovereignty. Now let's get to the information operations side, because this is where Iran, especially the IRGC media ecosystem, is extremely deliberate. The most recent IRGC release shows a clear simulation of obliterating US bases in response to any attack, and it is presented with unmistakable intent, precision, and confidence. The sequence highlights layered strikes, missiles and drones working in coordinated waves, command nodes lighting up as targets, and rapid follow-on salvos designed to overwhelm air defenses and leave no recovery window. The tone is not theatrical, it is calculated, a direct warning framed as a documented capability rather than a threat, and it is meant to land in Washington as a message that any escalation will be answered decisively. What makes the video strategically significant is how it ties imagery to deterrence logic. It is not just showing explosions, it is communicating readiness, survivability, and the promise of retaliation at scale, reinforcing that Iran's response would not be symbolic, it would be operational. The messaging is designed to shape decision-making before shots are fired, to rattle assumptions about safe rear areas, and to remind US planners that regional bases and logistics hubs are not untouchable. In one clip, you see the central idea: Iran wants the Pentagon to internalize that diplomatic feints and coercive deployments do not erase geography, and they do not erase Iran's capacity to strike back hard, fast, and repeatedly. When you watch those clips with a strategist's eye, the messaging is consistent. First, they emphasize survivability, tunnels, mobility, and the idea that launch capability cannot be preempted. Second, they emphasize volume, not one perfect strike, but multiple waves, multiple launches, multiple systems working together. Third, they frame the entire posture as defensive retaliation. The implicit sentence is always, if you strike, you will be struck back repeatedly and from places you cannot easily neutralize. That is psychological warfare in the strict sense, not about scaring civilians, but about influencing planners, investors, allies, and domestic political coalitions inside the United States that do not want another open-ended regional war. If you take only one conclusion from our conversation, let it be this. An aircraft carrier is an extraordinary instrument of power, but against Iran, it is also a test of vulnerability, restraint, and strategic maturity. The American carrier posture can project force, yes, but it also concentrates risk into a single iconic asset. Iran's approach, by contrast, disperses risk across geography, across tunnels, across mobile launches, across mines, drones, and layered defenses, and it aims to make the cost of aggression feel both immediate and politically unbearable. Thank you for watching. Subscribe to help honest journalism thrive. God bless you.